My name is William Griggs, host of the Startup Slingshot TV, a resource that delivers guidance from experienced entrepreneurs and business experts on how to dream, launch, and grow your business. Today's guest is Dean Kakritas. Dean is the founder and CEO of 910 Innovation, and in this episode, we're going to cover all sorts of topics. We're going to talk about why he launched his business, how he launched his business. We're going to talk about how you can be a better service provider and how you can find service providers in a better way. We're also going to talk about why design's important and how you can find the designers you need to build and design a great product. And then finally, at the end of this interview, we're going to go on a tangent. Dean and I are going to talk about philosophies on life, and we'll discuss actual items you can use to alter the course of your life and become a happier person. So enjoy. All right, Dean, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, hi, Bill. How are you? I am just really excited to be here. This is the only thing that I've booked on my calendar for the entire day after this. I think it's happy hour. So I've been looking forward to this since waking up and having breakfast this morning. So let's do it.
That's exciting. I'm glad you're excited to be here. The audience is excited to learn from you. You know, we're glad that you cleared your schedule. This is a Friday. We know you could be out in the heat in Austin. We know you could be up on the slopes in some mountain place. But you've decided to take your Friday afternoon and spend it with us. So we appreciate it. Today.
No problem. I'm just amazed that I could find a quiet place to do it.
Yeah. Well, today the audience knows why they're here, but we want to increase their likelihood of success inside their business. And to do this, what we're going to do is we're going to really dig into your new company, which is 910 Innovation, including why of all ideas did you select to go after this one with all your business experience, how you're getting it off the ground, and then how some of your previous business entrepreneurial experience has really impacted where you're taking this business and how you're doing it, so that the audience can learn from your experience and use what you're using now to help launch their own startup. So let's get started. What is 910 Innovation?
Sure. Well, 910 Innovation, we call ourselves an unagency. I've worked in the agency business for, you know, four straight years. So the first thing I did when I left is create an unagency. And what we do is we take a lean, responsive approach to creating memorable experiences, user experiences for our clients. We work mostly on our clients' behalf because they're the kind of the lifeblood of projects for us. But really, we have a two-sided model. We care about our clients, but we also care about our delivery partners. And I call them playmakers. I felt that delivery partners or agencies isn't the right way to describe what they do. For me, playmakers, we're all playmakers. Everybody that's delivering to a client should be a playmaker. And that's where the name 910 came from. Being a soccer, you know, a big soccer fan, As most people know, in soccer, the number 9 and 10 players on the field are the kind of the talisman of the team. They're usually the most gifted goal scorers, the best passers. They're the ones everybody looks to save the day, to win the game, to lift the spirits of the team. So I felt that it was the most kind of logical way to describe what we do as playmakers for our clients.
Gotcha. That's interesting. A lot of people in the audience, they understand the agency model, and they're going to get to understand a little bit the unagency model. But with all your business background, we talked about it before we started recording, some of your experience working with clients. What about this idea got you fired up? It seems like you could do a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean, it really was a product of my entire career, I think. It was the most natural thing to do after, and I had to go through that entire career to understand that. It's basically 18 years in the industry, in the tech industry, right out of engineering school, starting out as an engineer, becoming a product manager, becoming a product engineer, strategist, a business developer, and then moving to a design firm. I kind of saw every aspect of product development from both the hardware side, the software side, the networking side, how products come together. And so I didn't feel like I could go back to a product company. I didn't feel like going back to an agency was the right thing to do. What I felt was missing was just a better way of helping companies, big and small, create winning products. And because it's really hard. I mean, Apple makes it look really easy, but that's because it's really hard. And in a way, they've shown a lot of people how to do it right, but it's still very hard to do. So I try to, in my own special way, help my clients with a higher level of service than they're getting from agencies. Not that agencies are bad. They have really good intentions, but they have, frankly, they have different business models than what a lot of other companies are in the business to do. So I really try to mold my business to every great new opportunity rather than to say, well, this is the only way it can be done. Give me your money and let's hope for the best.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So some of the people in our audience might be thinking, we need some outside support. We're looking at going after an agency. Why would they go after an un-agency like 910 Innovation? What's different in the model? How are you, you know, going up a level in your service?
Well, for most people to know what an un-agency is, you have to know what an agency is, and you have to have worked with an agency in some way, shape, or form. Not everybody does that at their companies. Some people are shielded from it. Or some people have to do it all the time. So for people that don't understand what it is, the easiest way to understand it is from time to time, internal product teams need to go outside, out of house, to acquire different types of design work, or it might be development work, it might be kind of strategy, it might be concept development, ideation. Rather than me try to hire all those people and create a big team of my own, which I could, I decided that the best way to do that would be to instead go out and seek who are the best in the business at doing these different things and have a relationship with them. Usually these are smaller boutiques that I work with. The guys that have left big agencies like Frog or IDEO, they typically go and they form a smaller boutique. And I usually know who most of those people are because the industry is pretty small once you've been in it. And, you know, I've basically created really good relationships with them. I look for the ones that are like-minded. They believe in Lean Startup. They believe in Lean UX. They believe in doing the right thing at any given time and working on the client's behalf. And really having less of focus on deliverables and paper and PowerPoints and telling people how smart you are and really thinking about outcomes, like what does this client really need? How do we get there as quickly and as cost efficiently as possible? And how do we make sure it's the right answer? I really spend a lot of time thinking about who are the people out there that think that way and have demonstrated that, because a lot of people say it on their websites, but they don't really do it. I think I've assembled already about 10 small firms that I think exhibit that philosophy of business and are proving it every day. So that's what I look for.
Gotcha. It makes a lot of sense. I kind of see this interview going in kind of two different directions. One, if the people are interested in hiring service provider, you're helping a little bit. You're helping them a little bit understand what to look for and how to kind of decide which way to go. And then on the second, it's if they are a service provider in themselves, how do they work better with clients to deliver a better result? So what was kind of the first thing you did once you decided to start 910 Innovation?
Well, the first thing I did was take a little bit of time off, because I knew it was going to be a really different way of thinking, working. I really reflected and meditated a little bit to think about, what am I really trying to do here? I probably won't get it right initially, but let's at least get things going in the right direction. I probably don't have all the answers yet, but together with my playmakers, I hope, and my clients, we can come to that decision. So I wrote a lot of stuff down. I opened up my Evernote and wrote pages and pages of thoughts about kind of how I wanted to build this and what was important to me, what my convictions were, what I thought worked with agencies, what didn't. And I think that was the beginning of it. And then I really just started talking to people. I talked to old clients. I talked to a lot of big companies that used to be my clients or I know are typically procuring outside services. I talked to, you know, designers and developers and tried to figure out where the gaps were for them, what they weren't doing well. And learned a lot, and really that was the basis of how I rolled out the initial form of the company. And because in essence, I was innovating something myself. I really wanted to be in the conversation of what is a better way of helping companies procure design services and development services, because I didn't, you know, being in the industry myself and being the recipient of lots of these projects, seeing them not work especially well, I knew that there were that things needed to change. So kind of had a hunch, started with that, and really I've been in business now for a year, you know, making mistakes, but learning from them and you know, course correcting.
Gotcha. Yeah, there are a lot of smart people listening to this or checking this podcast out that are in an agency setting, whether it's one that they own that's small or they're in a bigger agency, and they can glean a lot of how-to advice out of what you just said about going to talk with the clients, talk with the skill providers, and then understanding how you want to be different, because that is one of the main issues in any type of service-based business is how do you avoid being a commodity and how do you get to work with the clients that you want to work with and make the money that you want to make. So even someone who's sitting there at a big agency right now listening to this, or in their own agency just trying to get by, those are some tactics they can think about implementing, some brainstorming processes that they can use to think how are they going to zig where others zag and differentiate themselves.
That's very well put. I mean, you know, working with designers for 4 years like I did at Frog, some of the best in the world, I got to know designers well. I got to know kind of how they think, both junior level designers and very experienced designers and developers. And it's a really noble profession. Not a lot of people understand it in the outside world. Not a lot of people in product companies appreciate what designers do and understand what designers do and appreciate the process of design. But it's a really noble process, and if done right, it can produce transformational results, and I've seen that happen. Apple has shown the world what design does, created the most valuable company in the world based on design. So, I mean, I think a lot of people are understanding this, but on the designer side, they don't learn business in school. They don't learn a lot of the skills necessary to be able to acquire the type of work that they want to do. A lot of times they're subjected to whatever comes through the door. They're forced to work on something, even if they're not experienced in it, they don't care about the brand, they're not passionate about the space, they have to work on it. And sometimes they can even do a pretty good job, but I know one thing for certain, and that's designers do their best work when they're doing exactly what they want to do, and they're given the time and the space to do what they do best. And that's what I try to bring those things together. I try to bring clients with great projects together with the best designers with the talent, experience, and passion to make a difference in that point in time.
Gotcha. Can you give us an example of maybe a client that you've worked with recently and how that engagement unfolded? Maybe take Outbox like we talked about before the interview.
Sure. I think Outbox is a great example. You know, they're you know, one of the most revolutionary, I think, startups in Austin. They're trying to solve how you manage and interact with your snail mail. You know, two great founders, both HBR graduates, had great industry experience. They basically could have done whatever they wanted in the world. They could have done it anywhere they wanted. They chose Austin to do it, luckily for me. So the only thing these founders kind of lacked is they didn't really understand the Austin community because they were brand new, and they didn't have a whole lot of experience in the design space and how UX can be a true differentiator and basically how to execute great UX design. So you know, it was kind of a match made in heaven, because at Frog, a couple years into my Frog stint, me and another designer had the opportunity to work with the U.S. Post Office and help them envision a bunch of different things that they could do better to, you know, improve their services, be more efficient, create a greater level of service, create new revenue models. So we had already been thinking about U.S. mail. I had already been thinking about it in the past and really cared about it and saw that there was a problem. And here was these two really smart guys coming into town trying to solve it. It was like the perfect storm. So I forget if I reached out to them or they reached out to me. I think it happened almost simultaneously, but we immediately had a meeting, and personality-wise, philosophy-wise, we hit it off. So it just felt right, and I can usually quickly understand if it feels right between me and founders. And we just you know, jumped right into it, helped them frame the kind of key pillars for success of their product UX, understand really where their needs were, who they needed to meet. I had them talk to a lot of designers that I knew in town that had opinions and good perspectives on on how design could make a difference for them. And then we just started making some decisions. We interviewed a whole bunch of my partners and some partners that I wasn't yet affiliated with, but really to get just a good cross-section of inputs to make these decisions. And we chose a few partners to create their logo, to everything from creating their logo to creating to brainstorming around different UX concepts for their MVP, to actually designing their MVP, to helping them find some internal resources. So it was kind of a little bit of everything. And ideally with my clients, I can do that. I can in many different ways. What I try to do is in every single phone call, every single time I talk with clients, I try to give them some sort of value, leave them with something that will be helpful that they can put into play, some artifact of value, really. And that's how it worked with them. And it's just really grown nicely. And now I'm on their board of advisors and really doing, I'm one of their beta, I'm the third beta tester, I guess, using the product today. So for me, it's like the ultimate client right there.
Gotcha. Makes a lot of sense. We have a lot of startups, and that's who we're going to be focusing on for the remainder of this conversation. A lot of startups listening to this, watching this, they're probably thinking, that idea sounds awesome, and yeah, I probably should mess with the design, but they're not really convinced. You give the Apple example. What are some other thoughts around why they should even care about the design of their product? I mean, that sounds kind of like a dumb question, but like really care, like get the best people they can on board to design a great looking, great, well-functioning product.
Well, I mean, I think history has shown us that the most successful products are usually the products that are made by people, by humans for humans, and fill a human need of some type, provide human value. And I think the best products out there have nailed that. And some of them have done a whole lot of research up front to try to glean those insights that have helped them design products that hit the nail on the head. It took Google a while. Google initially was really, a utility to help find things, but then they discovered all these great things that they could create around that awesome tool. And they really always focused on that value. They didn't bring in advertising initially. They kept it very clean, very simple, and the rest is history. And Path is another good example of a company from the very get-go. They focused on design. Of course, Dave Morin came from Facebook and really understood how important that was. And I think if you look at the most successful products out there, it's been about nailing those human needs either from the get-go or soon after the launch, and either pivoting or kind of bringing the product up to speed. The ones that haven't succeeded, Yahoo's a great example. It just never evolved. It never really connected with human needs the way it needed to. It was left behind, and there's a lot of other companies that you could talk about there. So I think it's a human business. It's about talking to people, observing people, understanding cultures, understanding human needs, and not everybody takes that approach, frankly.
Gotcha.
And I think it's important.
Yeah. So it seems like some of the people you named was Google, Apple, Path. They're all differentiating themselves through that amazing product experience that you're saying, solution and human driven, which is an interesting perspective to think about. So if we do have a lot of non-technical people that listen to this podcast, get emails from people saying, how do I find a developer? How do I find a designer? If they're looking to make a really good looking product, what skill sets are they looking for? Is it UX? Is it UI? What can you break that down for some of these non-technical people like you've done for other entrepreneurs?
Stepping back from that, before you actually start designing things, I think you either understand your market and your customers and your users, or you need to understand them. And I think before you actually start cutting any metal, whether it's, drawing on a piece of paper or developing code, you have to, I think, have these kind of concepts, these UX concepts, these key pillars of your experience that are going to connect with people somehow. And it's either going to provide value around a known need, or just be really, really enjoyable to I think interact with and to engage with. You're gonna really want to be in that application and that experience. And so I think you need to spend some time. Some people just I think know it all along, and they just have intuition or just great vision. Other people have to acquire that somehow. And at Frog, there were a lot of companies that paid lots of money to do full-on qualitative research. Whether it's qualitative, a full, qualitative program or ethnography or something kind of guerrilla, you have to do some sort of homework to understand your users and your market. To some extent, your competitors, but really understand your users and have, I think, an understanding of what you want to build. You need to start building something. What I try to help at least startup clients with initially is really to understand those key pillars, what's really important to you personally, and what do you want to deliver to the market. And let's just start building that. Let's not, kind of chart out this long, drawn-out design process, what you want to do. Let's just start building it and then start validating that with and making sure and course correcting and refining with your constituents, your ecosystem partners and also your customers. Is this the right thing? Is this the right thing? Keep asking yourself that and making adjustments.
Gotcha, makes a lot of sense. So taking the users and the market into perspective and then beginning to understand what you're gonna build and don't make the plan, like you said, the 10-year plan. Instead, build something out, test it, iterate on top of it. That makes a lot of sense. What about if the entrepreneurs that are listening to this have a developer or they're just with an idea right now? What types of skill sets are they looking for? We go back to the previous question.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously the typical conventional skill sets that designers have. They know how to use tools. They know the methodologies of design. But I think a great designer, what separates a great designer from a good designer, and anybody can really learn the tools. They can learn Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, any of those great products. You can learn that. But what separates great designers, I think, it's having that kind of empathy, understanding people, noticing every little detail around them. When they go into a coffee shop, having your eyes and ears open, what are people saying? What are people doing? Noticing their behaviors. Using products yourself. How do you interact with a product? So having kind of an open mind, an open heart, an open kind of, set of senses because I think if you have that, it makes everything else just that much easier. And I thought all designers had that, but I came to find out after working in the industry that they all don't. And sometimes they have filters. They care about certain things a little bit more than others. And just any designer isn't perfect for every situation. So I try to look, when I know what the problem set is, what a product is trying to solve, I immediately start to think about, all right, well, what designers or developers do I know or do I know of that have a real vested interest in this or have a unique perspective in life itself and culture and in their years on the planet to solve this problem. And I think that's what Steve Jobs did amazingly well. Is he wasn't, and I keep going back to Apple. It's such a cop out, but it's so easy for me. Because I've been a Mac user from day one. I mean, in the early days, I've really always cared about Apple and what they've done. But Steve Jobs just understood people, and he understood technologists and developers, and he knew how to kind of blend them together so elegantly. He didn't leave it up to just any designer to solve the problem. He really kind of curated that process. So I think it's obviously getting people that understand the tools, but really trying to match that perspective and empathy and kind of vested interest that designers might have with that problem to have a better chance of delivering a great result. Because they will do whatever it takes to get it right. They won't look at the clock or look at an SOW and say, well, there's only 20 hours a week that I'm supposed to be working on this. They'll be working on it around the clock, and they'll be thinking about it when they're sleeping and in the shower. And then when they come back to work, they're like, yes, this is it. And, I look for people like that.
Gotcha, makes a lot of sense. Like you said, people that know the tools check, the people that have the perspective or can tap into that empathy aspect and get into the minds of the market or the users or the customers of what your product is, the people that like you, like we talked about in the pre-interview, that you like that team or you like the actual designer that's going to be working with you, and then someone that borderline obsessed with what you're trying to tackle. So if you can find that, they'll be working beyond what they're required, not just trying to get the money, but also focus on it, like you said, when they're in the shower and thinking beyond the requirement. So they might come to you with ideas versus just doing the required work that you ask of them. And these are all actionable steps that the audience can take when they're looking for designers for their project. Is there any advice on how to find them? Now that we kind of know how to vet them, is there any advice on how to find a good one? Do you just Google? Do you ask around? What do you do? What would you do? I mean, you're say if I was in another city or another country, obviously you're a little bit biased. You want them to come to you.
Right. Well, there's a lot of great networks where designers hang out, you know. They all spend time on Twitter, they have Facebook pages, you know. So I go to a lot of these networks and I just observe their work. I look at what people are doing. I'm always looking at design work, just who's doing beautiful things out there, and I kind of keep mental notes, or I'll add them to Evernote as a prospect, somebody to keep an eye on. I'll put them into one of my Twitter lists, usually under something called Design Minds, which I'm always kind of watching their feed, seeing what they're talking about. I'm looking for life experiences. I'm looking for, obviously, some people that have been around for long enough to know what's important to them, to have convictions, to have a philosophy of business. And I really look for similar ones. And, you know, I really try to get to know my clients really well, get to know the founders and the decision makers and the leaders of those businesses. And I try to understand what they're looking for, and I'm always kind of in my mind connecting dots and like keeping mental notes. Well, if they ever do this, here's the perfect person, or if this person ever becomes available, I know exactly a great opportunity for them. And sometimes I'm just making introductions for people just because I want to help them out, and that keeps me current with what they're doing, and it keeps me current with what the client's doing, so I can stay involved and look for those next new opportunities to really do some great collaboration. So it's really just kind of staying out there and reserving enough time in your day and your week to keep up with what people are doing. Because again, it's a human business. It's about noticing what's happening in the world and picking up on trends and picking up on opportunities and gaps. I'm a strong believer that there's nothing good or bad in the world. There's just opportunities. There's always opportunities to do something if you just kind of, you know, invest the time and effort into it.
Gotcha. Makes a lot of sense. So you said Behance, the audio broke up a little bit when you said that. Twitter, you're looking for people who maybe have created products that you like. You can reverse engineer that, find out who designed that, and then just being connected and networked. And then knowing that it's more than just skill set, like you said, it's do they match? Are they interested in what you're working on? Do you have similar life experiences, that stuff?
That's right, exactly. It's just asking a lot of questions, you know, having a great, I think building a network. I think anybody in the product space should look to build a network around them that not just in their particular, you know, expertise, if they're a developer, just in the developer world, but in the designer world as well. And because at some point you are going to need to intersect with those people if you really want to make a winning product. So, and I would say the same thing for designers. They should be working with developers.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. We're about to start wrapping it up. Is there anything? I mean, we went all over the board. We started talking about what your business is all about. Then we kind of went off tangent and started talking about what startups can look for in terms of they're a client of a service provider. Then we started looking at more about design and product design and what startups should be thinking about and looking for in designers. Is there anything, any one thing that you want to kind of leave our audience with? Any one thing you want to share with them that we haven't covered?
Good question. I think everything we talked about, you know, is valid, and at some point it will play a part in what people are doing out there. But You know, what I would tell any, especially young person entering the business world now, or especially doing something on their own, is and it's something I probably discovered too late in life, is that before you can, I think, be successful in business, you have to have a philosophy of life. Really understand what's important to you. You know, what makes you tick? What are your convictions? What are your passions? And then convert that almost to a philosophy of business, because they should kind of be the same. I think ideally, how you want to live your life and what's important to you in your life should ideally mirror, you know, how you work and what's important to you in your business life. I think if you can somehow connect those two things, you're ahead of the game. And it takes some people a long time to do that. It took me, you know, well into my 30s before I could figure out what that really meant. And it took kind of, you know, moving from Boston to Norway back to Austin to figure out what that really meant. But it's really illuminated things for me, and it puts everything in perspective. And it really makes it easier to wake up in the morning and know what's important to you and how to focus your time and how to pick the right opportunities, the right partners, how to work with the right people. Because, you know, it's easy to make mistakes working with the wrong people that are going to basically take your focus away from what's important, or deflate you, or point you in the wrong direction, give you the wrong outcome. So I think, again, if you're a product person, you're in the people business, but to be a human, you have to have some sort of a philosophy. You need to, you know, think like a human.
Gotcha. So, yeah, we can't end the conversation on that. We got to open that a little bit up. I'm interested. Most of our audience is younger folks, so this is information that can help them. So let's dig into this a little bit. What do you mean by philosophy of life? I mean, you talked about what makes you tick, what you're passionate about, what's important, but how do you create that into actionable tactics? Like, what should they be thinking of beyond what makes them happy or what's important?
Well, I think most people in society today are, you know, from an early age, they're kind of programmed to follow a certain path, to get good grades, get into a good college, so you can get a good job, and you're kind of, in a way, you know, being taken down this path. And some people, you know, they do very well that way. Other people like me did not. And it took me a while and a few wrong turns to figure out that, well, this is what I'm really good at. So why should I work the way somebody else expects me to work, or in some certain role, some very narrow role that I can, you know, I want to do so much more, but I can't because I have to work, you know, in this prescribed role. So that's the problem. And I think if you look back at the ancient Greeks, you know, I'm Spartan, so my family's from Greece, so I care a lot about the ancient philosophies, and I've always kind of followed them. And, you know, in ancient times, you learned a philosophy of life before you really had a religion, or you went to college. You got taught how to live, how to make the right daily decisions that really affected everything. So I kind of, being very nostalgic, like really nostalgic, I think that that's missing in today's world, is that we don't really have the chance to make those decisions. By the time we snap out of it, we've already went to college and get our first job, and we're already doing what we think we're supposed to be doing. We're chasing all these material items that all of our friends have and we think we need to have. And really, it's like a lot of people just haven't stopped to say, you know, what do I really want to do in this precious short life that I live? So I think the sooner people can, some people understand it. It's not everybody doesn't, but if you're not sure, then I would advise people to invest the time. Maybe take a long trip, take some time off, find a mentor that seemingly has figured things out, that can share their experiences, maybe read some books. There's some great books on Stoic philosophy, even Tim Ferriss, who a lot of young people have been reading a lot of, credits Stoic philosophy to helping him design his lifestyle and make those decisions to kind of unplug a little bit from that prescribed path that everybody expects you to take, and really define what he wanted to do with his life. So I think it's a combination of different things. You know, I employ different tricks, like, Actually, another reason my firm is called 9-10 is that since high school, at 9-10 in the morning and 9-10 at night, all my alarms go off on my phone, my computer, wherever I am, and I basically stop what I'm doing and just unplug for a few moments to just think about, what am I doing? Is it the right thing to be doing? Is it you know, what I should be doing right now? And just really reflect on, I'm not so bad off. Things are pretty good in life. Maybe I should put things in perspective a little bit. So that happens twice a day for me. And, you know, everybody should think about what can work for them to help kind of help them establish that conviction, that philosophy, what's important to them, how they want to live their life.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. I was telling you a little bit earlier, I had visited Acton down there in Austin previously, and they have interesting a course kind of on this, which is unique for business schools, but really focusing on where you want to go with the skills you have. What's your personal scoreboard? So if you were to die today, how would you look back and know whether you lived a successful life or not? What are the actual key metrics that you're going to use? One example, I believe, was the professor was saying number of slopes skied with his children. He wasn't saying, 45 mil in the bank. He did have a number, which is another thing that they teach a lot of entrepreneurs to have, is to say, and since we're talking about startups and philosophy of life, it's to think, you would think right now, if you're 20 something, man, if I had $10 million in the bank, I would be set for life. I'd do whatever I want, right? And if you make that your goal to do 10 million in the bank, make that your number, because you'll have the habit or the tendency, once you get to 10 million, you'll look around, you'll be on a different ladder or a different rung of the ladder, and you'll still be looking up and say, hey, that joker's got 25 million. I'm smarter than that guy. I'm going to keep working. When in reality, if you look back at what you really wanted to do, you have more than enough money to do everything you want to do. So really thinking about, like you said, avoiding the prescribed path or questioning the prescribed path, and thinking about your own scoreboard, your own metrics. There's one that I came across recently, which was Zig Ziglar. And I don't know much about him, but he has this thing called a wheel of life. So it's something that you apply all you're supposed to think out life goals for each chunk of this wheel. So it's physical, intellectual, spiritual, family, social, financial, and I think I'm leaving one out. I think there's seven parts. So that gets you thinking, like, very specifically, what do I want in my friendships? What do I want in the bank? What do I want my career? Career is the seventh one. What do I want my career to do? So what I've noticed with myself or with other people that I talk with is we're often focused on the, I like to call it like the next now. So it's like the next 6 months versus the next 3 years. You might know where you want to go in 5 years, but you're really focusing on like, who next month I need to do this, next month I need to do this, versus where's this really taking me? And so one of the things that I'll, since we're still on this tangent, is tell the viewers to check out commencement speeches, which I think are just an interesting opportunity to find out people's philosophies. So whether it's Steve Jobs at Stanford or Oprah's at Stanford, or even Michael Lewis, who's an author, did one at Princeton. It's like, that is when people try to boil down their philosophy, either looking back or looking forward, and trying to impart that on other people. So it's 10 or 15 or 30 minute speeches that you can just consume. They're a little different than TED Talks. They're more motivational, more focused on your philosophy of life. And you can get a lot from there. You might say, well, I agree with Oprah on this point, but not on this point, or Steve Jobs on this point, at this point. But it really, what it does is it gets you thinking. And it helps that they're successful people, but it's also they're human. So it gets you thinking through the process and be like, never really thought about that. So I guess one point as we wrap up, which was Michael Lewis's, just the nuggets you can, I mean, lots of people have seen the Steve Jobs one. So the Michael Lewis one is one I'll talk about. What's interesting is his career path. So he talks about how he navigated that, how his college professor told him after he wrote a paper, don't ever write for a living. Now he has, a boatload of best-selling books, and kind of used that as motivation. Didn't listen to it, followed his passion after he kind of realized the standard path of investment banking that a lot of Princeton grads was not for him. But he also talked about his life philosophy of realizing how lucky we all are. And he lists out how lucky you're born to be in America, or born in America, lucky that you are able to get into Princeton, lucky who your parents are, lucky that you have these professors And that his life philosophy is, you have to realize that this is, you didn't earn, you earned some of it, but you didn't earn the majority of it. It's about luck. And that most people, or a lot of people, are unlucky. And so because you're so lucky, you have to help the unlucky. And it's just,
that's right,
interesting philosophies that you can just garner, something that gets you thinking. Now, we're normally talking about startups on this. We went a little bit off tangent, but I hope this gives our audience something to think about. Think about the next instead of the next now, and how they want to guide their decision. I think that's, like you said, so many people are interested in Tim Ferriss, and that's the reason why. It's because Tim Ferriss gets you thinking, wow, what else could I do? Could I live on the beach in Thailand? Could I be over here doing this? Can I follow my passion? Same with a guy named Chris Guillebeau with the $100 startup. And a
couple. Right. Well, there's so many interesting stories out there, but you have to seek them out and invest the time to, you know, read those stories and to, like you said, boil them in together and pick out the things that make sense and would apply to you. And, you know, and I think it's all important. It's all a big journey, you know? So
it is. So yeah, there's another set of actionable items our viewers and listeners can take away. They can start thinking, where do they want to be? How are they going to judge their life? And then start setting goals, like we said, and then think about their life philosophy. I thought it was interesting that all they need to do is maybe listen to one, make it really simple. Listen to one commencement address or check out some Stoic philosophy writing, go to the library a week. I mean, that's it. Then that's going to get the ball rolling and it's going to alter your trajectory. And then you're going to send Dean an email. You're going to send me an email. And be like, thank you. Thank you. This is awesome.
I hope other people can be as happy as I am right now in my early 40s because it makes all the difference in the world. When you do become successful in business, it is so much richer when you don't have this feeling that, you know, you're not happy with that. It's not enough, and it isn't in perspective. So I think it's just a wondrous achievement in life in itself is to have that realization.
Yeah. So if the people want to reach out to you for business, for life advice, how can they get a hold of you?
Just to talk about soccer?
Yeah, soccer, sports, anything.
I'm ATX on Twitter, and that's probably the most immediate way to get a hold of me and easy to remember. My last name at me.com is my email address, and 910.net is my website. So those are probably the three best ways.
Yeah, great. I'll put those in the show notes. And to all the viewers, the loyal TSS viewers out there, we appreciate you sticking around for this. If you have any advice on me, on topics you want to hear, don't hesitate to send me an email, wgriggs@thestartupslingshot.com. Love to hear from you so we can tailor this to help you with your startup. So do that right now if you're thinking of something. Don't wait. To all the viewers, appreciate you watching. And to Dean, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.